This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Oh, hello. Didn't see you there. We were just jamming to my new intro song, which I will just say, I know some of you have some thoughts about it. I know someone was like, it sounds like Middle Eastern music. I don't like it. But I think it's cool. Happy Friday. Welcome to Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Welcome to the show. Matthew Marsden, Blaze TV contributor and actor and producer extraordinaire, along with Eric July, Blaze TV contributor and just multimillionaire, founder of Ripaverse Comics. Look, I would, if that was me, I would say it all the time.
All the time, yeah. Multimillionaire. Maybe, yeah. We should put that we should put that on the little
we should on the, yeah, on
lower,
the
third, run, lower, on third. Lower third. Lower third, yeah.
Also multimillionaire. You know what I would do, Eric? I would carry around like a super ridiculously large wallet, and I would just, for no reason at all, just go through it and have like so many $100 bills.
Like this big though. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is Eric again with his wallet? And it's like,
he has to like carry it over his shoulder and just to like look for no reason at all at how much money he's carrying. So I'm glad you guys are here because it's Friday and, Let's just have fun with it. So we're going to talk about kind of it's not a fun subject, but it is necessary to talk about just how bad. I know if you listen to the Biden administration or to the elected officials in New York, they will tell you crime is down. You guys didn't realize this. Crime is down. Crime is down. We're good when it comes to violent crime. Well, it's just that that's not true. And there has been a string of just completely unprovoked attacks, specifically in New York. I want to go through some of these. So earlier in the week, a 54-year-old woman was the victim of an unprovoked attack in Brooklyn when a repeat violent offender, of course, these people who keep getting let out of jail, just completely sucker punched her in the face and broke her jaw. Here's some of that.
Eyewitness News exclusive. Pichardo says he didn't say a word, just stared at her, then broke her jaw.
He hit me very, very strong over here. And he break everything here. Every time I see my man, I cross. I don't want to be close to nobody. I'm very afraid. Yes. I turn my song everywhere I'm going. And when you walk with me.
And by the way, those of you who are listening on podcast, you heard that her mouth sounded like she had like stuff in it. That was just from the swelling of her jaw that he broke. So he was arrested, but then charged with misdemeanor assault because they say there was no intent behind the violence. And he was released immediately. By the way, he has 7 prior arrests for assault. And it's not just him. And it's not just her. This is happening, like I said, all across New York. Here are a couple of those stories.
I was literally just walking, and a man came up and punched me in the face.
Stories from New York City women going viral on TikTok.
I literally just got punched by some man on the sidewalk.
Their videos detailing how they're allegedly getting punched in the face completely unprovoked. Several women have posted these videos describing similar allegations in just the last week. Hallie Kate posted about an assault on Monday. She says she had to be treated at a local medical facility for injuries to the left side of her face.
Oh my God, it hurts so bad. I can't even talk.
Guys, like, it's very easy. You just put these people in prison where they belong and you don't let them out. It's like, it's very easy. You take this very easy thing, this policy that we have to prevent things like this from happening, and the left is just like, no, that's too mean. I don't know. I think it's mean that random women are getting attacked on the streets for no f-ing reason. That's what I think is mean.
That is pretty messed up. Seriously, this is one of those
issues.
We just
said we wanted to have fun.
Yeah, true.
And now here I am.
Here we are. But I do believe that this is one of those issues, right, when dealing with like acts of assault and things of that nature, where no matter where you're at on the political spectrum, it is an objectively bad thing. And I think most people would agree there. But it's one of those problems, much like even if you robbery and breaking and entering and those sorts of laws as well, where I do believe that those issues will resolve itself less if actually the police were involved. It's funny, New York. We know what happened with Perry. We talked about Daniel Perry. We talked about this on the show extensively, right? And I think what it is, it's almost like an experiment where when people feel like there's zero consequences to their actions, they will act out and do just absolutely foul things. So I get it, right? This and this is what I think people need to understand about it in regards to the police is that they're more of the responding agency. They don't prevent jack diddly. Yeah. They're more of a responding agency. So it's always going to be up to you to defend yourself. But you see what type of culture, or rather society, that you live in where you have folks just walking, minding their business, and getting smacked in the face by some crazy person, probably high on a multitude of different things. And it's just, that's not how a high trust proper culture should be functioning, for sure. Mm-hmm. I totally empathize with that. But you wonder why this stuff takes place. I think it's more of a domino effect, right? Where you have people like, let's say if I'm in New York, right? And I can sniff this type of stuff out. There's somebody that is up to no good. You've seen these videos. You got people like bucking at random civilians on the train. That's just we don't deal with that type of stuff out here. I get it. They live in kind of a different dimension out there in New York. But that is just such a weird thing. And then you'll get folks that'll post. And I don't know if you guys talked about it on the show the other day. I can't remember the lady's name. Where she's like, where are the men with all these women getting assaulted?
Right. Yeah.
And we're like, wait a minute.
In jail.
Yeah.
You locked them up for protecting women.
Right. So I am going to be under some sort of consequence, even if I snuff it out, even if I could physically do something to prevent it.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the one to pay in the event that something happens? And whether he dies, whether he gets severely injured, I am going to be the one that gets hurt. So you have it's a double-edged sword, right? You got people that are doing things that are, of course, very, very irrational because they fear of no consequences. And then in cases, not saying with the chick getting punched in the jaw in the middle of the night that someone Batman would have came down to save her. I'm not saying that. I am saying that more men particularly would be far more willing to step in, which would then fend off these crazed lunatics from doing something like that, or at least they do it far less often.
Yeah.
If they were in fear of any sort of consequence. So I think it's a domino effect. And New York City is the experiment there.
Yeah, you're not wrong. To Eric's point, I mean, I've literally had the conversation with my husband of like, if you're in that position, as much as I want you to protect women, I need you in our family and not in jail. So like, I don't want you standing up and being the one that they're going to take to prison. And I hate saying that because it goes against my core values. But at the end of the day, having my husband not in jail for doing something to protect someone else who is not a member of our family is just like priorities.
Yeah. I mean, look, the threat of violence is a real thing. You need to have it. Whether people want to say that you don't, and we live in this kind of kumbaya world, is that the fact of the matter is that men are more aggressive mainly than women, and you need to have the credible threat of violence to stop other men from doing these things. That's just the way it works. And like you say, Eric, sometimes people think, oh, the police. And don't forget, we've already had defund the police, right? Mm-hmm. So not only are they not responding in time because there's not enough of them to turn up, and why would you become a cop these days? Because the cops are under the same kind of situation that we're under. And why would you respond? Because you respond, then you're the one that's going to get prosecuted. Right. And I think that the Marine, what was his name? Daniel Perry?
There was one that was Daniel Perry and one that was Daniel Penny, and they both happened around the same time.
Oh, yeah, because
Penny
Daniel
was
Perry,
New York.
Yeah, I think Penny was
Perry Daniel was Perry Austin.
Was, yeah, no. Yeah, I'm thinking of something else. Yeah.
Why would Daniel Penny? Why would he? I mean, he was awesome. He stepped in, you know, took the guy down, and he's the one that's getting prosecuted, which what they should do is that, no, you can walk. It's fine. You did your job. You did your civic duty. Mm-hmm. It's a massive problem. And notice, they are all hitting women.
Exactly.
Why?
Exactly.
Why aren't they hitting you? Why aren't they hitting me? Because the chances are, yeah, the chances are, dude's gonna like whack them back. Yeah. They always go for the weaker person, mm-hmm. right? And it's just a fact. So I'm sorry, you voted for this, right? You voted for, you know, gun laws. Well, guess what? If everyone was packing in New York, they would think twice about assaulting people. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
Elections have consequences. These people brought it on themselves. I hate to say it. It's a reality and the truth. The reason why we don't get it here is because you'll get shot in the face if you do it in Texas.
Right. That's a great point. All right. Let's go ahead. And I got to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I'm going to talk to parents of a child whose story you are not going to want to miss, specifically if you are concerned with public schools. Yeah, we've got one of those when we return. So I was on theblaze.com just the other day, and which I often am, and I encourage everyone, if you have not yet subscribed to the new website, I encourage you to do that. It's great. They're putting out really great content there. But I was on theblaze.com, and I saw this article about a fifth grader that was accused of racism for blackface. Yes. And so this apparently happened over in Austin, which, again, I don't claim, okay, I don't claim Austin as part of Texas. It seems that they have just gone off the deep end over in Austin. But this was this 12-year-old girl from Austin, Texas, and some of the staff at her school, elementary school, accused her of being racist because she inadvertently, I guess, happened to have black paint on her face during a school field day. So I want to bring in her parents to discuss what happened next. And let me just warn you guys, it's a real doozy. Welcome to the program. Tell me, I was going to call you the Lammy family. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's actually now I lay me down to sleep.
Lay me.
So pronounce it lay.
Lay me. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Good. I never underestimate my ability to screw up someone's name. So thank you for joining me. So tell the viewers out here, what happened next? So your daughter goes to school field day, and tell me if I have this right. Okay. All of the different grades had different field day colors. And so there was like team blue and team orange and team gray, and your daughter's team was team black. So everyone had to dress in black. Is that correct?
That's correct. Her specific fifth grade homeroom, she was 11 years old at the time. It was her fifth grade year. And her homeroom had voted on the color black as their team color. She had really wanted gray or blue. They had chosen black. And so it's basically, it's like our old track and field days when we were all little kids. It's a day where the whole school is out on the field, lots of school spirit, and the kids are pumped up. It's the end of the year. You're excited for this day. And so one of her classmates had brought in her dad's HME stick. It's this like camo stick where it's brown, black, and green. And the kids got a hold of the stick in the class, and they were all painting up their arms, their legs, their faces. And our daughter basically drew stripes on her face like another boy in the class. And then she looked over at that boy, and he's smearing it in all over his face. So she did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And they had seen this from other kids who are coming into the classroom with the blue face. They were completely dressed like a Smurf.
Interesting. So, okay. Yeah. So everyone's doing it. It's a very benign, innocent thing that they're all doing. They're all doing it of all different colors. But
yes.
So what happens when your daughter and another boy on Team Black do the same thing with their face paint? A substitute teacher?
Yeah. So that day, there was a substitute teacher in the classroom. So she basically was off to the side as the kids were all getting ready. And our daughter noticed that she was staring at them off and on and then looking down at her phone and doing something. And at some point she called our daughter and the other child out in the hallway and she said, "Hey, you know, I know you don't mean to be racist, but what you're doing is racist. It's called blackface and you need to go wipe that off." And so she sends them to the bathroom. And this is what's so funny to me. I think if you've been in an elementary school lately, it's single ply toilet paper. So she sends these kids to the bathroom to use single ply toilet paper to, you know, basically wipe off this very sticky face paint, which is like what football players use, hunters use. It basically makes it worse.
Right.
And these two kids come back out to her and they say, "Hey, this isn't working. We can't get it off." And she said, "Okay, I'm calling the office. I'll have someone come escort you down there." And so they're standing in the hallway. And a couple of minutes later, someone from the front office comes to get the kids, takes them down to the office and has them sit in the counselor's office to wait for the principal.
And so they're waiting for the principal. And I read in the story that the school therapist was like walking back and forth and making your daughter uncomfortable, but they're waiting in the principal. And what happens when they get into the principal's office?
So the other child goes first and is in the principal's office for a few minutes. And when he walks out, his back is to our daughter. So she can't see what his face looks like. She just sees the back of him leaving. Mm. And then the principal comes to get our daughter and brings her in to her office and basically sits her down at the desk and says, "Again, you know, I know you didn't mean to be racist, but what you're doing is called blackface. It is racist. And you're making other adults uncomfortable in the building." And she basically handed her some wipes and said, "You know, I need you to wipe this off of your face." So our daughter takes the wipe. She's wiping her face. And when she's done, she says, "Is this good?" And the principal said, "No, it's not. Let me help you finish it." So then she takes a wipe and wipes our daughter's face. And so our daughter says, "Okay, can I go now?" Because right now it's lunch. And so, you know, little kids in elementary school, they love their lunch. Yeah. They're hungry. Yeah. And she's like, knowing all my friends are at lunch right now. Am I going to miss lunch? And so the principal said, "Well, you need to go out and you need to apologize to the sub because she's very upset." And so Camille said, "Okay." And she said, "Well, what are you going to say?" And our daughter said, "I'll say, I'm sorry for what I did." And she goes, "Well, what did you do?" And she said, "I'm sorry for being racist."
Oh,
and
no.
she said, "Yes, say, I'm sorry for being racist."
No.
And so our daughter says that because at this point, you know, think about an 11-year-old little girl
right.
who's never gotten in trouble and sent to the office. She wants to get out of there. And I think a lot of parents have seen their kids in certain situations where they just want to get out of it. So mm-hmm. she said what she was told to say. She runs, she says, "You can leave." She knows everyone's at lunch. She runs back upstairs to their fifth grade hallway to grab her lunchbox, and it's not there. And so another teacher in the fifth grade pokes her head out and says, "Hey, is everything okay?" She says, "I can't find my lunchbox." And she goes, "Well, I bet one of your friends took it. Just go on ahead and head down to the cafeteria." So as she's heading down to the cafeteria, she can see in the same hallway, the school therapist is now upstairs with the sub. Our daughter said it looked like the sub is upset and crying and that the therapist is consoling her. And I said, "Did either one of them stop and look at you or check on you?" And she said, "No." And I just put my head down and ran to the cafeteria.
So, and I want to make sure that this is clear. And I, for no reason other than we are talking about an accusation of racism, okay? The substitute teacher was white, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you're talking...
And the therapist was African-American. So
okay.
The therapist who's African-American is consoling the sub, who's white.
Right, which does not make a whole lot of sense.
Against... the sub.
Right. Against the sub who was white, who had no business being offended by a total accident, you know, with the children painting their faces. So she did not, your daughter did not end up making that apology, correct?
No, basically,
good.
She goes down to the lunchroom. She gets down there and all of her friends are sitting at the table waiting for her. And as soon as she walks up, all of the little girls are laughing and they're like, "What's going on, Red Teletubby? What's going on, Tomato
oh my
Face?"
Gosh.
And she looks at them and she said, "You know, what are you talking about?" And she didn't realize it. She felt it, but her face is completely inflamed, red. There's a rash all over it. And so they're like joking around, pointing out how red her face is. And so she sits down, basically tells her little girlfriends at the table what happened. And around that time, the principal comes in with baby wipes and starts throwing baby wipes on every single lunch table. No one is allowed to have any color of face paint on unless it's just a little mark under their eyes. And Camille just kind of has her head down and is eating. And so they all go out immediately after lunch to the field. The older kids had track and field day for the second half of the day. And so I asked her later that afternoon, I said, "Did you go and apologize?" And she goes, "Absolutely not."
Good.
She said, "I knew what they were doing to me was wrong. Mm-hmm. I knew that you and Dad would back me and know that that was wrong." And she said, "I basically spent the entire rest of the field day avoiding her. And if I did have a question or I needed help from an adult, I went to one of my other teachers or I went to one of the moms." And so, no apology from our child.
Well, there should be an apology to your child and to you guys, quite frankly, because I'm listening to you talk about another adult who I have not given permission to touch all over my child's face and rub, you know, baby wipes with God knows what chemicals they have in them that I have not looked over and approved to be touching my son's face. So I'm listening to you and I'm already in mama bear mode just listening to your story. But so tell me what you guys did next, because you did hire an attorney, correct?
Yes. So it all happened on a Friday. She came home. She's, you know, telling me what had happened. I'm kind of in shock, calling my husband. He gets home. We're calling our family. We're calling some friends of ours in the district just to kind of check in and go, are we crazy or was this really not right? And so that happens on a Friday. We get absolutely no communication from the school. No one calls us, emails us, texts us, nothing. So we try to have a low key.
Back in the day when I got sent to the principal's quite often. And every time I got sent to the principal, I was really scared about the fact that they were going to end up calling
my
parents.
Your parents. Exactly.
That was the next thing that would happen.
Exactly.
Well, and they called us for a number of other things that happened during the school year. But no, they thought that this inflamed issue, they could take care of it themselves.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens on a Friday. We try to just have a very low-key Saturday. And we're all processing it. Sunday comes around and I look at Jay and I said, I can't send her back. They haven't called us. I'm not comfortable sending her back to that campus. And I had had a friend at that point remind me that we all knew a former TEA attorney, a Texas Education Association attorney, and that I should call him. And so I called him Monday and said, can I speak with you? And part of why I wanted to do that was I wanted to know, are we crazy? Are we overreacting? Right. Is what happened to her as wrong as it feels?
Right.
You know, I wanted to get someone who was neutral, but an expert in the public school system to really just set us straight so that we could almost like have some resolution. And if we needed to move on, move on.
Right.
And he basically said, you know, no, this was very wrong. And I said, well, I'm not ready to hire an attorney just yet. I'm going to send her to school tomorrow. So I send her back to school on Tuesday. And this is where the story just kind of takes this really weird turn that kind of blew our mind. The homeroom teacher was not in school the day it happened. As of Tuesday, the only people that we're upset with are the sub and the principal. Well, this homeroom teacher comes back in on Tuesday and just kind of reads the class the riot act, You all upset the substitute teacher. Some of you didn't know what you were doing, but some of you knew exactly what you were doing. And when she's saying some of you knew exactly what you were doing, she's staring at our daughter and this other child.
Of course.
So all the kids go to lunch. They're all abuzz. They all know what the innuendo is. And so that night our daughter comes home and I just emailed the attorney and I said, well, this is what happened today, but I'm just going to watch and see how this plays out. So Wednesday, I pick our daughter up after school and I said, how did it go? How was your day? And she said, I had to write an apology letter. And she starts describing that experience of being in the classroom, the teacher again getting all over the entire class. You guys have emotionally harmed and upset this sub. She's never going to teach fifth grade again. You all need to write apology letters. And at this point, we had had other families contact us. Their children had told them what had happened. They want to know, how can we support you? And I said, please have your kids support our daughter when she's in the classroom, because we aren't there. And we've told her she can't discuss it with anyone. She can't write anything down. If anything like that comes up, go straight to the office and call me to come pick her up. So she has one of her really good friends in the classroom as the teacher is passing out paper to write these apology letters. And her friend is mouthing to her, don't do it. Call your mom. Mm-hmm. And the teacher calls out our daughter's name and says, do you think this is funny? And she says, no. And so on each kid's desk, there are school issued iPads. And because they're fifth graders, they're not walking around with cell phones the way bigger kids are.
Right.
That's their only outside contact is an iPad. So as the letter is being passed out, you know, she's also being put on the spot. So she's not thinking, I have to ask to go to the office and call my mom. Her first thought is reaching towards the iPad to email me because she had been allowed to do that before. Mm-hmm. And the teacher walks up, grabs her iPad, puts it on her teacher desk. It's the only iPad confiscated. So our daughter just puts her head down, writes a note. I'm sorry for upsetting you and for what I did and for being racist. Goes up, hands it to the teacher, and the teacher's standing there reading all of the children's notes. So our daughter kind of waits for a few kids to get backed up in that line, and then she basically walks up, puts the note on the teacher's desk, and then walks out to get her lunch and go to lunch to avoid that contact with the teacher.
It is so crazy to me that we are living in a time where it seems to me that the children are the ones who are staffing and teaching in this school, because the fact that a substitute teacher would, I mean, you would go to such great lengths to console an adult because she misunderstood what the children were doing. I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm like, sounds like you guys rooted out a crazy person who no longer will be affiliated with the school subbing. And that's a good thing, because she sounds to me to be mentally unstable. My words, not yours. But I just, this is insane to me. And Jay and Kelly, I know that you, you know, I don't know how, if you've ever watched the show before, but I try to get these stories out because I want people to understand the rot within the public school system. There are so many bad apples and bad actors involved. It's just so hard to defend at this point. So, but I do want a happy ending, right? Your child is now at a new school and thriving.
She's at our middle school.
Great.
She was diagnosed with a pretty upsetting medical diagnosis later in the summer. And so, you know, a lot of people have asked us, why did we not move her and put her in a private school? Mm-hmm. Well, through having this trauma the last couple weeks of fifth grade to then having a somewhat traumatic medical diagnosis, I basically wanted to protect her and put her where she felt the most comfortable for the first day of school for sixth grade. And when we went to her, I said, where do you want to be?
Yeah.
And she said, I don't want all of them to have ruined my chance to go to my school I'm supposed to go to with my friends. And so I will say that we have had a lovely experience at that school for sixth grade. The principal was aware of what had happened. Mm-hmm. We haven't discussed it in detail, but there was a lot of, we would all like to have a fresh start. And so our daughter is very happy where she is right now. That doesn't mean she'll stay in this district, you know, for the rest of her academic career. But for right now, where we needed her to be to kind of heal emotionally, mentally from what had happened, mm-hmm. and then physically from what, you know, she's got going on medically, we feel confident that she's in a good place.
Yeah.
And she's happy.
Well, most importantly, I would say she is cleared in the court of public opinion as far as we're concerned here. And I know all of our viewers are concerned. Please send her our best. This is, of course, Jay and Kelly Lamy over in Austin telling their story. I appreciate you guys and the time that you took to tell that story.
Thank you for having us on.
Thank you guys so much. Send your daughter our best.
We will.
All right. Thank you. Take care. And with that, we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right, welcome back, gentlemen. So hundreds of anti-Israel protesters flooded the street yesterday outside of a fundraiser for Joe Biden at Radio City Music Hall. Now, you love to see it, the left eating their own. I never get tired of this. You guys created these little mini radicals, and now they're your problem to deal with. Here's some of that.
Whatever that is. Yeah. That is hilarious.
You would be thrown off a building there. They would kill you. But the little sheep, they don't care. All right, that's good. So they were saying free Palestine, genocide Joe has got to go. They're very, very mad at Joe Biden, which again, we love to see it. Okay, so apparently $25 million was raised for Joe Biden's campaign. It was all the elites, Stephen Colbert, Lizzo, and a bunch of hecklers made their way into the event and shouted from the upper tier seats, shame on you. Now, I just would like to note that while Joe Biden was in New York going on, you know, trying to raise all this money from all these celebrities, Donald Trump was also in New York, but he was attending the wake of that NYPD officer that was murdered by a career criminal. We just talked earlier in the program about all of these people who are getting let out into the streets, a career criminal with, oh, you know, just 21 prior arrests. So I'm going to play, Eric may disagree with Donald Trump a little bit in this clip, but I want to play Donald Trump yesterday in New York actually attending the funeral of someone who was killed by all of this violence in New York City rather than going for some glitzy fundraiser. Watch.
They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them, and this should never happen. I just visited with a very beautiful wife that now doesn't have her husband. Stephanie was just incredible. Their child, brand new, beautiful baby. Sitting there, innocent as can be. Doesn't know how his life has been changed. But the Diller family will... You'll never be the same. You can never be the same. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently. But this is not working. This is happening too often.
Now, I think if I could just maybe mend Eric's position with perhaps maybe Matt's position or Donald Trump's position, right? It's that whether it be from the police or from just the average citizen on the street, whoever it is, like, we have to have all rules that we follow. We have to have some type of order. It can't just be complete chaos all the time. I think the argument would be who carries out the enforcement of that, right? Who is the enforcement mechanism? But I do agree with you, Matt, that it is kind of now it's a vicious cycle because who would want to go into the force? So now, because they are, I think, in some cases, underappreciated, they're taking away their money and stuff like that. And so then these cops are doing this for little pay. They've got crap hours. They go, they're unappreciated. They're constantly putting their lives on the line. And for what? So now you've got a bunch of bad actors. So at this point in time, I can only assume that most of the overwhelming majority of cops that are still in the profession are doing so because they must be corrupt. I mean, I know that there are a lot of viewers that are not, right? Like, you are law enforcement or you're former military or whatever, and you're not. I'm just saying it's a vicious cycle of rot. So what do you do?
Well, I know a lot of the guys are trying to get out. I certainly know that.
Good ones have to be thinking about that.
In Los Angeles, because it's not just the fact that they feel like they're not backed by the public anymore, because they'll turn up somewhere. There's always cameras. Everyone's waiting for them to do the bad thing, because instead of looking and thinking, well, a cop's going to come and he's going to do a good thing, everyone's thinking cops are going to come and they're going to do a bad thing.
Right.
And so that's extra pressure, right? Yeah. But they're also not being backed for the most part by their own departments,
their
bosses are going, oh, no. Now, again, I'm not saying everyone. I know there's some great police departments out there, Arizona. I know in Texas, great police departments. But you have to think.
You must not be talking about Dallas. Sorry, keep going.
No, so look, being a cop, I had two of my uncles were policemen in the UK, and it was a vocation. Like, they felt a calling to go and do it because they saw bad things happening and they wanted to rectify it.
Right.
Why they're looking now and they're going, well, what's the point? We're arresting them anyway. We're putting ourselves at risk. Anyone can have a camera. We can be personally sued. We can lose everything. Why are we doing it? What's the point?
Right.
And so they're leaving and I actually think that there's a lot of guys that are in there that can't leave because they've got like 4 more years
until
their pension,
and
they've given 20
that.
Odd years.
Right.
So, but I think in a lot of the other law enforcement agencies, clearly there's a lot of corruption. There's bad people in there. And let's not forget what happened over the past few years, where a lot of people that are in these agencies and in law enforcement that wouldn't take the
right.
You know what? We're like, I'm out. So you've actually got the guys that would stand up to tyranny leaving.
That's what I'm saying.
So who's left?
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, like, I don't mean to offend if they're, a viewer of this program or a listener of this program is in law enforcement. I'm not calling you out, because you're clearly one of the very few good guys that remain. Eric might not share my opinion, but that is my opinion. I want to make that clear. So, but it's like, it's a vicious cycle. The military, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who would want to join? You know who wants to join the military right now? Lesbians and trans people, which I'm sorry, if we come under attack, I don't want women or people who may be confused about certain things.
But look, we are missing an opportunity, because we all know in war, the element of surprise is important. So what could be more surprising than, hello, I'm here to liberate you. And they'll be like, what the, what? Oh, get your guns.
That's the plan. That's the master plan,
smart.
Eric.
Oh man, what 5D chess move that is right there. But look, I think it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? I think all of this speaks to the absolute danger of the state, and why I believe that if you are a person that advocates individual liberty, I think in pushing for the absolute like abolition of a lot of these laws that are in place, starting there, that do not allow you to protect yourself. I'm willing to put the whole police issue on the back burner first and foremost if we can at least address that one. Why do certain states have duty to retreat laws where you can't even shoot someone in defense unless you're running away and they're still like attacking you, even if it's on your own property, which is insane.
Right.
But that happens in certain areas. Thankfully, Texas is Florida of the world. Those are not one of those, but those sorts of laws exist. Or where you have things like the National Firearms Act or the various federal laws that absolutely prevent people from either owning weapons altogether or owning certain types of weapon to protect yourselves. those are the core issues, because what ultimately ends up happening is that when there is a problem or a problematic, dare I say, person that is has all intentions of doing something incorrect, and any rational person can see that they are going to do something bad in terms of inflicting harm on another individual, I have to assess it, as we were talking about in a previous segment, I have to assess it like not just, well, I can neutralize this threat, whether it be to myself or to other people. I have to look at it through the lens of, well, if I act a certain way, I'm going to be the one that's on the hook, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a problem. That prevents a lot of people from acting in a way that they need to act to get the job done. I hate that we have to have conversations about protection of individual liberty, and we have to first look at either be the cops, or whether it be legislators, politicians, people that are involved in the court system in some way, shape, or form, when it should be looking to ourselves and community first and foremost. And that should be where we're starting. That's going to be the most effective unit, and that's going to be the most efficient one. But because of the overall setup of how law works in this country now, we have to look at it through that lens. Well, what are cops, and wait for them and do some things. And I think that speaks to the problem.
Yeah, to your point, I know we got to go to break here, but to your point, I remember when I was taking my concealed carry license class, and they talk about, I mean, they really do freak you out, because they're like, you
that's
look.
That's all the class is.
Yeah, they're just like, all right, listen, you got to be really careful, and you're probably going to want this insurance or this, you know, this legal help. Sign up for that, because if you do find yourself in a position where someone breaks into your house and you kill them, you got to be really careful what you say. And it's just like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. They broke into my house. Of course I have a right. What are you talking about? So it's just wild when you go through that and you're like, oh, I don't have as many liberties as I thought I did, even here in the state of Texas. Yes. So, all right, we got to take a quick break, but we want to thank our sponsor first, Jace Medical. So if COVID taught us many things, one of which was, oh, hey, it turns out we're not very comfortable with the amount of medicines that are manufactured in China, because when something happens, you got drug shortages. Something like COVID happens and that place shuts down. What are you going to do? Where are you going to get your medicine? You need the ability to take care of your family's health no matter the situation. That is why you need the Jace case. It's a personalized emergency kit that contains 5 essential antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. Imagine your child getting strep throat and they're all out of amoxicillin everywhere. What are you going to do? I suggest the Jace case. They're continually working to expand their medication offerings. They've got ivermectin. So whatever you guys need, you can customize it to fit your family at your house, and then buy a gift card for a loved one to make sure that they are protected as well. You can go to jacemedical.com, enter code Sarah at checkout for a discount. That is jacemedical.com, promo code Sarah. Well, congratulations is in order for Washington State, where their Democrat Governor Jay Inslee just signed House Bill 1589, forcing utility providers to generate 80% of its energy from renewable energy resources by 2030 and 100% renewable energy sources by 2045. So by the year... Let's face it, we're not lasting that long. But if we did, by the year 2045, there would be a natural gas ban in Washington State. And this does go into effect immediately. Now, I just seem to recall, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this, gentlemen, but I'd like to start the conversation by saying, I seem to recall that when we're talking about renewable energy, this is something that we here can talk about credibly here in Texas, because several years ago, we had that big ice storm.
ERCOT and all that, yeah.
Everything shut down. And the windmills, as it turns out, just froze. So they weren't working properly, that renewable energy, because it turns out the renewable energy sucks. Unless you're talking about nuclear, but they never want to have that conversation.
I'm willing to bet there. I haven't read it, but I'm willing to bet that that's not included. Nuclear.
I'm sure it's not. Yeah, it never is. 80%. It's never in the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's the only one that should be.
Yeah,
it never is.
Efficient, top to bottom. Yep. The fact that we haven't tapped into that is unbelievable. That nuclear energy is something that's not what they're talking. They're talking about obviously electric and maybe some windmill stuff, but that's it.
Right.
That's to the and look. maybe I'm being a little optimistic. Some people will look at it as a more pessimistic thing, but I look at it as an optimistic thing. I think from a libertarian perspective and what makes me giddy, that the energy thing may be the thing that finally gets particularly the South, but especially Texas, to tell these guys to go screw themselves as far as the federal government. Because there's a big, big effort with not just in the federal government, but these other states to push people off for oil and gas. That's insane, and it's not ever going to happen in Texas. But I wonder, as these companies, it's more or less coming from the government trying to incentivize them sometimes with stolen funds to do this thing, right? To invest in electric vehicles and all sorts of things. This is going to be an intriguing, I think we should watch out for the next years, because I think that might be the issue that does it for people. If not the whole border thing, I think what will do it will be the energy stuff.
Yeah, it's got to be personal for people. So when the bills start going up, and they've already started going up here, you know, I mean, I can tell you.
But renewable,
I mean, posted about that lady, the electric bill
the other day. And you know what I love as well is like, this happened in Malibu. Right. They were like, because that's where, you know, the Hollywood elite go up. They live up in Malibu around that area. And when it came to putting windmills off the coast, they were like, oh, no, please don't ruin our view.
Right.
I'm like, oh, so you're okay with it until it ruins your view. And then, no, I'm not having any of it. It's ridiculous. But look, not only it's a communist play, right? We know it's a communist play. We know what this is all about. It's all about control. But what it's also about is the people that fund Republican politicians are in the oil and gas business. And it's all about breaking them. That's the thing. People don't understand what is going on. It's the left is very, very good at this, about getting this mesh, you know, like we're very bad at kind of coordinating things against the left, and they're excellent about coordinating different efforts against us. Mm. And that's part of it, right? They want to take away money from Republicans, basically. So then you got no way of funding candidates, and there you have it. But and by the way, they keep going about it's green. It's killing the amount of little birds that those solar farms kill, the amount of bald eagles that those giant windmills kill. I mean, they're not really thinking it through at all.
Yeah.
And if you call them on it, they're like, oh, and that's without saying, by the way, I lived in California for 20 years, right? They would have rolling blackouts. It would shut down.
That was all the time. Yes.
All the time. Yeah. So you kind of have, like, I love the fact they're moving to electric vehicles. Their grid cannot sustain it. They just can't.
No. Yeah. Right. And it couldn't happen to a more deserving bunch over there. But you're like, no, you know what we should not do? We should not take the advice of the people who have rolling blackouts in the year 2024 in the United States of America. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right. Those of you who have not yet heard, we've got a new movie for you to watch. It's really fun. It's our second comedy film. It's called Agua Donkeys. And if you subscribe at BelizeTV.com, you can join in on the fun. Look, it's we're in this situation. It's an election year and things are really stressful. And sometimes you just want to tune out and just laugh at a dumb comedy. So you can do that by going to BelizeTV.com/AguaDonkeys and you can subscribe there. And then I would be remiss if I didn't play you guys Taylor Lorenz. There was a Pornhub Awards show, and here's Taylor Lorenz dancing at the Pornhub Awards. Yes, that's right. Those of you who are listening, she is wearing a mask, which I don't think prevents the contraction of AIDS when you're at a Pornhub show. I don't think it does. I mean, I need to ask Anthony Fauci. I'm not sure. Maybe Anthony Fauci can weigh in on whether or not the mask will prevent her from the chlamydia she may get with those people. It's a valid
question. She's not very smart.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.